This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer
on the UAE's number one talk radio station, Dubai Eye 103.8.
I'm Helen Farmer, and this is the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Some incredible experts talking across a whole range of topics on today's show. The big mistakes families make when it comes to money and their kids. Why should all teens be taught financial literacy? We are finding out from author and educator Marilyn Pinto. Sania Shuktai is the CEO and founder of the Wadi Tribe. They help children understand fear and anxiety through books, and we were exploring how sports can help children deal with some of those issues. Talking future skills with Principal Claire Turnbull. What can schools be doing to prepare our kids for the future that might not be in your normal lesson plan? And if you're looking to keep the kids busy after school, Kids Up had some fun courses and camps for them to try. We were speaking to CEO Susie Kanu about her book, Hear Us Speak, Letters from Arab Women. What were the summer stories she heard and what still needs to change in the region? And we're tackling challenging topics through books with the founder of a new subscription service.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
I'm curious to get your questions, your concerns when it comes to your teens and maybe your money, maybe their money, as we talk about why teens should be taught financial literacy in light of a brand new book coming out. Joining us in the studio is Marilyn Pinto. She's a Dubai-based educator and author, and this book aims at changing the way today's young children manage money. She's the founder of KFI Global. It's an education company that specialises in exactly this, teaching teenagers how to make smarter financial decisions. In that book, Smarter, Richer, Braver, we're going to be exploring, and of course, crucially, taking your questions and maybe some worries too. Do you give your teen an allowance? Is it something you're weighing up? Or perhaps you want to teach them more about money but not sure how to do it? Marilyn with us today. We're talking about future skills in schools later in the show, Marilyn, and I'm curious to get your take on what you feel schools either get wrong or completely omit from financial education.
Well, I think I might be biased, but I think with financial education, even though there are three parts to it, there's initiation, there's execution, and then there's transformation. So a lot of schools are now starting to think about it because the governments have realized that this is a big conversation. The economy is in such a state that everyone's realizing that maybe this is actually a good time to start teaching our kids about money. So I guess the initiation has started off well. You know, even in the US, you now have doubled the number of states which are mandating financial literacy as a class in high schools. What I am concerned about is the next stage, the execution, because that, you know, research has shown that that's not really going well at all. And for a number of reasons, there aren't the resources, the teachers aren't trained themselves, and it's very difficult to actually implement this when you don't have the training and you don't have the resources.
And often, you know, changing a curriculum, it's like turning around an oil tanker. It's absolute glacial speed trying to get anything pushed through at all.
Yes, exactly. And that's the second point. And then you come to the third point, which is transformation, which is a lot of the, when I say when schools get wrong, is that they focus a lot on the, it's taught as a math-based skill. And financial literacy isn't a math-based skill. It's got so much to do with the psychology of money. It's got to do with your mindset. And these are aspects that very few, if any, financial literacy programs actually focus on, when that should be the main focus, because your attitude and your behavior is what's going to is what's going to make the program transformative.
So if it's not happening in school hours, it then falls to us as parents to either reach out such as programs to yours, or do wider reading, have conversations with our kids, which we should be doing anyway. Even if schools were having the most incredible financial education, there is, of course, the role of a parent to be talking about what happens within the family, what expectations are, and helping them navigate some of those real life situations. But I wanted to kind of ask you about the other, because we've seen an awful lot of apps recently as well. And I'm kind of keen to get your take on that, Marilyn.
Okay, I'd like to actually split that into two, one with regard to parents and one with regard to apps. Yes, I agree with you. Parents do have a very strong role to play, whether or not schools do teach them. You know, it is important, and it falls upon us as parents to talk about it. But I think we should also be forewarned that our kids don't really listen to us. So
you say this as a mother of a 13-year-old
yes,
and a 15-year-old.
No, I say it even as when I started this program, they were 8 and 10. And I can tell you even then that, I thought, how hard can it be? I can teach them. And, you know, every time I'd start talking about it, I'd be met with, you know, deep sighs and eye rolls.
Yeah,
and,
mom,
do we really have to talk about this stuff all the time? Do you always have to be so serious? Can you take a chill pill? No, it is serious. So we have to understand that, it's called the proximity bias. Yeah? We are too close to our kids for them to realize a value. We shouldn't take it personally. What we just should do is maybe leave it to the experts, leave it to people who understand how to teach it to them in a way that's effective and in a way that they enjoy to learn as well. And that's where personal finance experts come in, I think.
And also it's not going to be loaded with emotion.
Yes, exactly.
My mum used to sit me down for any kind of serious conversation, it could be money, be boys, it could be school, it could be, curfew was a big one in our household. I didn't want to be there at that kitchen table.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Talking money, and the five common money mistakes to avoid with your teen. We have got Dubai best educator and author Marilyn Pinto with us today. Her book, Smarter, Richer, Braver. I have to say, I like the sound of being smarter and richer and braver. And that's out now. She's also the founder of KFI Global. It's an education company that specialises in exactly this, teaching teens how to make smarter financial decisions. I want to run through those five common money mistakes, but perhaps some of the messages we've got in might actually lead to some of those being revealed, Marilyn. So let's go to the text line. No name on this one, saying, my daughter's just turned 13 and in the past she hasn't had a set amount of pocket money just when needed. Now she's getting older. I think it's going to be easier for both of us if she gets a set amount every week or month. How best to calculate this? Thank you. Good question. What do you say to this listener and indeed any other parent who's in the same situation?
Okay, so I think if you're looking at the issue of just allowance, that's like looking at the broader issue of financial education through a pinhole, because an allowance is just one tiny, very, very small part of the entire problem. And if you're just looking to tackle only that, you're not going to get very far and it's not going to be very effective. So what you should be doing is actually giving them, if you're looking at only the allowance, it's working very tactically. These are good tactics. But what we should be doing as parents is maybe looking a bit more strategically at the whole issue. Like, what kind of mindset do we want them to have? What kind of psychology are we building up with them with regard to money? And that is a lot more important. And once you do that, everything else will fall into place. Because right now, whether you give her 100 dirhams or 500 dirhams, she doesn't have that mindfulness about money. She doesn't have the psychology already built up. She doesn't have a mindset about money that's probably favorable. Once you do that and you build up the psychology and the mindset and the understanding, everything else is just going to be a piece of cake. So I say, don't worry about the allowance. That issue will sort itself out. What you need to do is work more on the foundations of financial education.
So when we think about kind of the gold standard of having a good financial mindset, eye on the future, what would you love to see in every teen and young person kind of being instilled?
So much.
Which is why you've written literally books about it.
Yes, it's really difficult to distill it into three quick tips or something. But I think the smarter, richer, braver really encapsulates what I'm trying to do. Smarter just because once you learn about the different concepts of money management and learn how to make smarter decisions, you understand so much better. Your clarity becomes crystal clear. Everything that was so murky before and mysterious, now you understand how money works. You understand how the world works. You understand how marketing campaigns work, right? And that's so important. So that's why when I say smarter, when I say richer, because this will automatically translate into money in the bank, because you are now being smarter with your decisions. It automatically translates into more money for you. When I say braver, it's about the confidence that you get as a result of making these decisions. Mm-hmm. And this is not, a false sense of bravado. It actually is a confidence that's built on your competence. You're only confident because you know you have the knowledge, you know you have the awareness, you know you have the right mindset. And that kind of confidence can be very empowering in teens. It can make them step up, take bigger risks than they want to, just with regard to things, be braver with regard to their choices. And I think so when your question is the title of my book, mm-hmm. what I want them to be is smarter, richer, and braver.
And I would even extend that to people such as myself who has kind of, maybe subconsciously shied away from engaging in big financial decisions. And that was because I had a dad who filled out all of my paperwork and probably would do that to this day. And I'm nearly 40. And I think it is often a choice to engage and kind of lean into thinking this is for me. For, you know, finances isn't for other people who might be more intelligent and know all the buzzwords. A question here from Z saying, is the book aimed at children or their parents? Good
the
question.
The book is aimed at parents, because before we teach, there are tons of books about, you know, what teenagers, what they should learn about money. But unless we as parents understand how big a problem this is, how complex a problem this is, we are going to be doing what everybody else is doing, just throwing half-baked solutions at our kids and hoping that something's going to stick. And this is too big an issue for us to risk it. There's too much at stake. So this book is aimed at parents. It will completely change the way you think about financial education. And like I say in the introduction, if you're looking for a feel-good parenting book, look ahead. This is not the book. If you're looking for a book that's, you know, going to give you three hot tips on how to transform your teens into financial gurus, again, put this down. This is not the book. But if you're looking for some hard truths and some valuable insights with regard to why this issue is important, why teens are clueless about it, how you can change the narrative for them, then this is exactly the book for you.
And maybe you can help our next listener. Clara's got in touch saying, thanks both for this. My 15-year-old daughter is keen to invest in something. Obviously aware of interest rates at the moment. What would you recommend? She recommends crypto, but doesn't know much about it. And neither do I. Join the club, Clara. So investing.
Yes. Can I just draw an analogy here? Teaching kids about investing is like putting, or letting them invest, is like putting the roof of a house without building strong walls and strong foundation. It is a recipe for disaster. And I know everybody wants to get on the investing bandwagon, you know, crypto and NFT.
Who doesn't love that story? Exactly. Being like, I made $2 million from my bedroom.
I know, but I just have to caution parents and caution teenagers with regard to this. You don't want to be the one putting on the roof without having strong walls and strong foundations. And when I say the kids, teenagers are clueless, they're not just clueless about crypto, they're clueless about the basics of money management, about, you know, about debt, about credit, about budgeting, about emergency funds, about risk capital. These are terms that they don't know and they don't understand. And without knowing this, it is a recipe for disaster to get into investing. So I really would suggest that before you allow your daughter to get into investing, make sure she has a good financial education, because then she will be smart enough to make her own choices, and she will be smart enough to make the right investments. But without that, it's a very, very scary proposition.
And I understand the allure of that. Yeah. I understand. I met someone the other day who'd invested, I think, $5,000 and came back with 60. And I was like, that sounds amazing. I'd like to do that.
What if I told you? There was one kid in my class who said his brother invested 200,000 dirhams and lost everything in crypto. So,
and this is the thing. For every success story you hear, there's a whole lot going on behind the scenes that they are not sharing on social media. So what other common mistakes are you either hearing in classes or concerns from parents that think, actually, hang on, we need to address this?
So the investing one is a big one, especially now with all of the trending, you know, stories about crypto and NFTs. This is a big one. Everybody wants to get into investing, and it's a real struggle to tell them you need to wait. You need to first understand the basics. I think that's a really important one. The second one, I think, which is quite clear, is, again, parents focusing on tactics rather than strategy. So we spoke about this earlier with regard to allowances and how much money do I give my kids. This is all tactical. We need to focus on strategy. The third thing is kind of assuming that your kids are going to learn this somehow, or the schools are going to teach them. They aren't. So the sooner we rid ourselves of that delusion, the earlier we can, and the better we can equip our kids for this. And this is a really big one. I guess the fourth one would really be that we think there's always time, that, you know, they're going to learn it later. We don't understand the value of an early education. It's like compound interest. It's like the earlier you teach your kids, the more benefit they are going to get. And I think this is a really key one. It doesn't matter how old your teenager is or your child is. It's never too early to start teaching them about money. So don't kind of, a lot of parents think there's going to be time for them. Let them focus on their, you know, SATs or other standardized tests or whatever they have to do now. It's intricately entwined with every aspect of growing up and of adulthood. And a lot of teens are really scared of adulting because they know that they aren't prepared. They know that they know nothing about money. And this teaching them about money really gives them a sense of that control and confidence that's really empowering to see in a teenager.
Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. I think it's certainly got me thinking. Oh, so mine are much younger, 5 and 7. Is it too early?
If they started saying I want, it's not.
They've been saying, okay, I want since they could speak.
Exactly.
Caroline.
So my question is that, how soon do we start teaching kids about money? As soon as they say I want.
and adds to cart, smarter, richer, raver. Thank you so much. Really do appreciate your insights as well. And for anyone who does want to get hold of the book, it's on Amazon. Where else can people find it in Dubai?
Right now it's just launched. It's just a few days old, actually. So it's basically...
Congratulations. It is there. You can check it out on Amazon. As I said, smarter, richer, braver. And I think that's something I need to... Who doesn't want to be that? Marilyn Pinto, thank you so much. And if anyone who wants to find out more information about the book or indeed KFI, you're more than welcome to send me a message and I will send those details over.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We're with you this afternoon talking children's health, parenting and education. And joining us in the studio now is Sania Tuktai, the CEO and founder of the Wadi Tribe. She's written 11 books and the latest one is called Tash Plays in Croke Park. It's all about helping kids overcome fear using sports. Sania, thank you for being with us and adding another title to this series, which is really beloved by parents and kids, but also by professionals. You have a real passion when it comes to social and emotional learning. And I wanted you to perhaps break that down a little bit and maybe explain why this is so important to you, but also why us as parents need to be tuned into it as well.
Well, thank you for having me on the show, Helen. I'm just absolutely delighted to spread the message of emotional intelligence as well. My story of the Wadi tribe is accidental. When I moved my kids to this part of the world, for them, home was Ireland. That's where they were born and raised. And it was a huge change for them. So my daughter, I think she was around 11 when she came to me and she said, "Mom, I have anxiety." And I said to her, "There's no such thing. Just get on with your life." Perhaps something my mum would have said to me, just get on with your life.
I have an Irish mother, by the way.
Oh, do you? Mm-hmm. We need to talk after this. And then a year later, God bless her, she actually sat me down with a full presentation. She said, "Mom, you have to realize that this anxiety that you think is nothing is stopping me from socializing with my friends, affecting me academically as well. I'm actually paralyzed, even though it's not physical, it's emotional." And I was very shocked to hear that. And I sort of dive into the world of emotional intelligence. And the more I asked her and talked about this in research, I found that she wasn't the only kid who was suffering from different emotional issues. And what we would have perceived that these kind of issues sort of surface in late teens or preteens as well, I was really surprised to see that somebody as young as 8 and 9 were facing these kind of issues. And I knew that something had to be done. So in helping my daughter, getting her the right tools as well, the Wadi tribe was formed. We had characters. And because I was doing the storytelling sessions in the school, so it was easy enough for me to approach them. And I said, "Would you mind if we did a focus groups where we use the characters to teach emotional intelligence and try and see if it has an effect on the kids?" And we were all surprised. So, for example, one character, his name is Tonza. He's the only giraffe in the world with an aquarium backpack. So his shadow looks like a camel. The poor animal goes around telling everybody, "I'm a camel rather than a giraffe." So he's going to a self-identity crisis. So if you live in a country, maybe you're not born there, which country do you identify with? You know, are you identifying with UK, Ireland or UAE? So you sort of discover your identity through that character. Mm-hmm. And a similar way, I know we're going to be talking about fear as well. Tak is one of our most popular characters when
He's
it comes
a
to.
Very cute little turtle.
I know. I love him as well. And some of the questions that come my way is, why pick a turtle to play the fastest game on the field, which is hurling, an ancient Irish sport? And to be honest, I never thought of that before I picked the character. He was just lying there and I loved him. But he's a character that a lot of kids can identify who are having issues emotionally as well. So when they're looking at him, they're like, "He's small, he's not your average size." When it comes to a player, he has a lot of fears as well. So if he can get over that, maybe we can learn through him as well.
We've had a message here from Christina saying, "My son has a fear of new groups of children and will not engage in group sports. I'd welcome suggestions on how to overcome this. He's 6. We've tried rugby, football, karate. He'll do squash and swimming with children he knows in a very small group of 1 to 3.
That's actually a great question, because that's the foundation of social and emotional learning. So what's happening over there, Christina, is that 3 things. Your child needs to identify the emotion, which is fear in this case, and then what to do with it, and then who to talk with it. Before you put him into more different sports and encourage him to mingle with other kids, he needs to be able to recognize very simply, because we're focusing in primary. We have gone into secondary now as well. But you need to give the tools to the kids.
So in terms of, is that coping strategies that you pass on as a parent, or is it things that you might model to them? What do you think would work with that age group? Because I mean, my kids are a very similar age, Christina, and they, even things that they love, suddenly one day they go, I don't want to go today. I feel scared about going to this. And I find it very hard to now go, oh, come on, like, you know, you've done this before. And this is, you know, just a bit frustrating now because we've got places to go and people to see. Not helpful. I'm aware of this. But when it comes to getting a child excited or even calm and accepting about being put into that situation, what can be helpful?
Helen, I'm sure when you were growing up as well, either your parents or your grandparents told you that it takes a village to raise a child. And I firmly believe that it just happens that our village has changed because we've migrated from our country. So we don't have our family DNA, which was the root of emotional DNA. So it has to be where the parents are taught how to deal with it as well. Mm-hmm. They get the emotional intelligence tools, the teachers and the kids as well. So all of them have to come together to help this child. It's not just one person's problem, I'd say, at this stage. But and also, I think it's very important to let the kids know that it's okay to feel fear.
Absolutely.
It's okay to get angry. Sorry?
It's part of everybody's life at some point.
Yeah, and the truest thing of a human being are your emotions. You can't fake your emotions. So, for example, if you meet me and if your natural reaction is, I don't like her, that's your truest thing. Or you might say, you know what, I really like Sanya. I can't force you to like me or to hate me as well. And the same way you can't force a child to hate a sport or like a sport or want to be with someone. You've got to acknowledge them. Well, whatever that you're feeling, it's your truest thing. That's honesty. So that's very, very key before you even go to the rest of the foundation is to recognize that emotion.
Can I ask if sport helped your own children? Is this born out of a personal, scene that you've witnessed?
It did. And sports is one of the key factors when it comes to emotional intelligence. There's lots of other factors as well. But it could be where if you're having anxiety, which is stemming from fear, and that can lead to lots of other emotions as well. Just sometimes taking a breather, going out for a walk in the fresh air, or if you're into running, just going out for a run. It could be a minute or 2 minutes, whatever you need to center your energy. It's very, very important. Sports is very key. And also if you're playing team sports, not only is it good emotionally as well, but it also teaches you how to work in an environment in your career as well. So you could be a leader or within a team as well. So it's very, very important.
I know you're not just using the written word on paper. You're looking at kind of augmented reality and all sorts of different tech side as well. Tell us about that, Sanya.
Oh, this is very, very exciting, Helen. So augmented reality, when it came to me, we were looking at animation for specifically for tech as well. So we got this company up in Ireland and they're absolutely amazing. And we said, look, listen, what we want to do is that use the technology to try and help the kids when it comes to emotional intelligence. So what we're doing is we've got tech as augmented reality. It's in development at the moment, hopefully in a couple of months. If you have the book Tag Plays in Croke Park, you'll be able to put your app on it and the character Tag will come alive in front of you. So it could be showing him playing the sport of hurling, or it could be him trying to breathe when he's got fear as well. What exactly is he doing as well? And then also you'll start seeing tattoo stickers as well, which I think is going to be revolutionary as well. So if your kid is, say, for example, facing fear, you can have a tattoo sticker and suddenly when you put the app as well, that will show the kid what to do. They'll be able to visually see the solution.
Little clues and reminders everywhere. And before I let you get back, I'm curious about writing for children. I mean, I know your books are often aimed at parents reading to their children and having that time together and using books as a bit of a jumping off point to talk about issues that they might be facing. But when it comes to, I guess, purposefully using language or phrases when working with children, is there something you're very mindful of when you're creating the book, Sanya?
It is. So it's very key in the storylines to teach the kids the lessons. When it comes to certain words, what we do is that a lot of the books have lesson plans that the parents and teachers can use. They're free. Once you get the book, just get in touch with us through the Wadi tribe and we'll give you the lesson plans. And that teaches and gives the tools to the parents and teachers to use the books for the mental well-being of kids. And we would love to talk to the Ministry of Education and see how we can get a curriculum for primary and secondary schools into UWE as well.
A question here saying, question for Sanya now live on the show. Firstly, great advice. Secondly, is sell important for business down the road? Interesting question. I hope so.
Yeah, well, you can't have a business if you don't sell as well. But there's a thing called social entrepreneur, and I'm sure all of you are aware of it as well. If you have a business that is helping the community, That's called social entrepreneurship, and the Wadi tribe falls into that as well. But also we have the Wadi tribe foundation, where I'm just back from Nepal, where we donated books to orphans and kids on the streets who are begging out there, just to give them social emotional learning and the books as well.
Thank you so much. For anyone who wants to find out more about the characters, the books, lesson plans as well, what's the best way of getting in touch?
Go to the Wadi Tribe website, and it's just simple, info@thewadithribe.com, and just get in touch with us and we'll be able to help you out. And also all the books, and under the tab, the Wadi Tribe Academy, you will find a lot of the Accelerator Reader programs, plus the lesson plans as well to go with the books.
Lesson plan makes me think, don't bring back distance learning. I can't cope. This will be a fun one though. Sunny, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much. I think a really important topic, and to Christina and anyone else who is struggling with that idea of overcoming sports, I hope that was useful.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Riddle me this, Batman. What do you wish you'd learned in school to prepare you for the future? So in 11 years' time, it's highly likely you could be working in a job that doesn't exist yet. I'll tell you what, our kids certainly will be. And we're not talking about, sadly, building flying cars or time machines. Still hanging out, though, for those hoverboards from Back to the Future. The world of work is evolving so quickly. So it means we as parents and students as well are trying to figure out how to prepare for future job opportunities while really not knowing what we're preparing for. But I'd love to know from you what you wish you'd learned at school that you could have applied to your life today. Because joining us on the line now is Claire Turnbull, the principal of the Royal Grammar School Guildford here in Dubai. They recently commissioned a survey that revealed that Dubai parents are looking for future-ready skills to be taught in schools and believe it's important, and more important than ever, that their children learn these skills after the pandemic. Claire, great to have you with us this afternoon. How are you?
Really well, thank you, Helen. How are you?
I'm good. I find this topic so fascinating because, yeah. I mean, I look at my kids and I go, okay, she's showing some strengths at this and maybe we wouldn't be doing that. And you can't help as a parent kind of project what that might look like in terms of university or career. And really, we're kind of navigating completely the unknown, which I think puts schools in a really interesting, exciting, but also quite a challenging situation. So I'm curious why you decided to commission this survey and, you know, how many parents were involved in it, first of all.
Yeah, so we sought out opinions from 250 parents to try and get a real a wide range of opinions. And it was to support our philosophy and our research into what are the future ready skills that we are wanting to prepare our children for. You're right, it's a very dynamic environment, isn't it, for our children? And I think as parents and as teachers, we so want to do the right thing for them. Mm-hmm. That actually sometimes we've just got to really focus on the skills and know that that will then allow our children to carry forward.
So let's talk the skills. Were there any surprises? What came out from that list from parents that they would love their kids to be equipped with?
Perhaps, you know, not surprisingly, adaptability was the top one as an individual skill. And that's something that I know most educators, certainly we at RDS, that was something we've really been working on for a long time, you know, the last 15 years of that flexibility. People often talk about resilience, but it's actually being able not to just get stuck in a one route and say, I can go, I can flex and bend with the wind a little bit. We've all had to do that, haven't we?
Absolutely.
The next one was problem solving and being able, again, not to think that whether it be in maths or science, you've got to just follow one formula, but you can come at it in different ways. And the third one was teamwork. And being really able to work alongside our peers, not always be in competition with them, really know how to bring out the best in other people and the best in ourselves for that end game.
If I'm kind of curious to get everyone's take on this today in terms of things you wish you'd learned at school. What about you, Claire? Is there anything you think maybe I shouldn't have been doing, you know, parallelograms and maybe it was going to be, I mean, maybe not here, but taxes or, you know, any life skills that you feel like were missing, any gaps that could have been plugged?
But you're right. You know, I'm horribly mature, old, whatever you want to call it. We had no financial planning at school, whereas that's been an integral part of the PSHE program within the UK for the last 10 years, and then has a crossover in maths of actually teaching our young people about savings, about compound interest, about entrepreneurship. So if I'm honest, I think it would have been that from my childhood, but I'm really glad that that's already really embedded in outstanding school practice. When you see, you know, year 4 and 5 year old children setting up their own little mini businesses as part of the school program, and working out how could, if they borrowed this from here, how much would they have to pay back and what are the benefits? That, to me, are great life skills.
Claire Turnbull's with us this afternoon, joining us from RGS Guildford Dubai. It's so interesting to get your take on this message here from Fleur saying, I wish more schools would talk about fertility and what goes into raising a family on a practical basis. Everyone I know underestimated it. This goes for teaching boys as well as girls. Maz saying, I wish I'd learned that a business that doesn't make money is just a hobby. Samuel saying, I wish I was taught on how to read body language. And I'm curious to get Claire's take on this next. G says negotiation skills from buying a car to getting a pay rise. I'd never been taught that you shouldn't accept the first offer you get.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Joining us live on the line is Claire Turnbull. She's the principal at RGS Guildford Dubai. We're talking about future skills. They recently commissioned a survey to really establish what parents want to be taught in schools to help, you know, their kids deal with the future, whether that is on an emotional basis, but also on the practical as well. Because as we know, the jobs they're going to be doing probably don't even exist yet. We've already talked about adaptability, financial planning as well. But what about the tech side, artificial intelligence? Are we all going to be replaced by robots? I don't know yet, Claire. Where do you think AI can come into play in the classroom, and are we ready for that yet?
I think there's so many opportunities for AI to enhance the learning that's going on. We've already brought it in a number of aspects of the curriculum here at RDS, but it will never take away from those human interactions. And where you talked about your previous caller who said, how can we get that debating and that control in our conversations with those people who are our superiors, our bosses, etc., whether it be about a pay rise or a contract. We talk a lot with the children about how do you present that information in a way that the person listening is going to be able to receive it positively. And I'm not sure that AI will ever give that aspect. But my goodness, it can bring so much depth to learning and personalization to learning. So there's a real place for it.
And I'm just curious, and we were talking about, you know, financial literacy in schools earlier in the show today, and you addressed yourself that this is now being woven into the curriculum. But there are some things, especially in certain curriculums from certain countries or different aspects of it, that it can take an awfully long time to affect change. How much power do you have as a school to be adaptable to what parents are asking for and to implement, you know, tweaks here and there and being responsive to, you know, what kids and parents are asking for?
So yeah, there's real opportunity to be adaptive and responsive in the way we do things. If we're into an exam phase of GCSE A level, then there is certain restrictions, obviously, to what we need to make sure we've prepared our children so that they can really show off their skills to their best possible self. But at other stages, there's a much greater flexibility. But I do think most of what parents are wanting and what we as educators are wanting are to focus on the how. These different ways of the learning skills that actually enable, we feel, our children to be ready for what's going to come ahead. So it's less about subject knowledge, though there is a beauty in knowledge in itself. It's more about the how we go about all of the learning and how we can apply that to different subject areas.
What then about preparing them for, I guess, secondary education when it comes to if that's something they decide to go, you know, going to university, that independent research, studying. What, when and where, how do you start to implement that through the school age?
Well, gosh, I think you start that from FS1, if I'm really honest with you. It's not something that is suddenly brought in. The confidence and the ability to work and think independently, to have the confidence to say, but I think this because, to ask those why questions, to really develop your understanding, that's really imperative that that's happening from the beginning, because then there's no great big jump up. I think when we're teaching our children for independent research, there's such an importance to teach our children to have integrity in that. There's so much information out there for our children, isn't there? It's about saying, how do you really work out whether the information you're reading is accurate? Is it right for this project? Are you being rigorous in your assessment of the information to then be able to be confident in your independent conclusion?
That critical thinking, decision making.
Yeah.
Claire, I wanted to ask you, and I have to say, I feel like distance learning, the pandemic's kind of blurred lines between parents and teachers, you know, because for a time it was hybrid and thankfully, touch all the wood, my children are back in school now. But when you're thinking about future skills, where do you feel you'd like to see parents stepping up? Because something I feel like we forget a lot of the time is that we're all on the same team. Sometimes it can feel very compartmentalized. You will learn this in school and we will do this at home. But where would you like to see parents perhaps reaching, stepping up to, leaning into, however you want to phrase it, that perhaps could help them in a school environment?
But I think it's absolutely the point you made. We're all on the same team. And as long as we're working together for the best interests of our young people, then there's real strength in going forward. I think it's about us all being open-minded and not having a very fixed approach and systems, so that we as schools are listening to parents, parents are listening to us. We're having great conversations here, as I'm sure most schools are, of different ways of encouraging children to read at home, to learn their math tables if they're doing that, to take risks. And it's sharing all of our collective knowledge for the best outcome for our children and doing that together.
Interesting message here saying what's missing in school is respect and discipline. And this will very much vary from school to school, and I'm sure student to student. But to that point, that's not the first time I've heard this in the last week, that there seems to be some basic manners missing, whether it comes to eye contact, greeting someone, saying thank you, hello. And that, of course, needs to absolutely come from parents. But where do you feel like you kind of need to toe the line in terms of boundaries at school when it comes to these life skills? Because that's exactly what they are.
Oh, absolutely. And it's about having high aspirations and high expectations on behaviour, and also understanding what respect means. I'm sure many principals, I'm on the door every morning and it's a good morning, Johnny, good morning, Abdul, every morning. And they say good morning to me back. For the little ones, it might be a wave, but you know,
principals can be scary when you're
recognition. It's really important that we do that. It's the pleases and it's the thank yous, isn't it? Respect is one of our core values. We have six values here at RTS, and it's central to all the relationships. It's central to friendships, it's central to the working environment. And we have to show our children how that looks. And that's absolutely in class, that's absolutely at home, and it's also, of course, online.
And lastly, Claire, what are some of the jobs you've heard on the wish list from kids at RGS Guildford? Are they all wanting to be, you know, influencers and gamers, or are we still talking zookeepers and astronauts? Please say the latter.
Conservationist is a massive one for a number of our children, which is wonderful, isn't it? Environmentalists. I have one of my children only a couple of days ago saying I'm going to be an eco warrior, and then I did have to kind of unpack what that actually meant for the three-year-old who spoke to me, which was relatively interesting. I learned more than I think they did. But also scientists, our children have great hearts. You know, they want to solve the world's problems. It's our job to skill them up so that my world, they're able to do that.
Perfect point to leave that on. Claire Turnbull, thank you for joining us. Principal there at Royal Grammar School, Guildford, here in Dubai.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We've been talking education, and that doesn't necessarily just have to be school-based. It can be what you choose to engage in and your kids enjoy outside of school as well. I'd love to know some of the hobbies, the after-school activities that are a real hit in your household. Share the wealth. Give the companies a bit of a shout-out. And if you're in need of some inspiration, then you're in the right place. Joining us from Kids App, that's Kids with a K, is Kareem. We're talking about courses and camps to keep the kids busy. Kareem, great to have you with us. How are you today?
Great. It's always good to be back. And by the way, I've been a gamer since I was a kid, and I believe I know exactly what that game is. I won't say anything.
Dare. Don't you dare, because you're a friend of the show. You cannot win that laptop, my friend. Yeah, I mean, I have to say, my games of choice, I mean, Snake, obviously, on my Nokia, circa 1998. And then I fell down quite a significant Tetris hole back in the day where, and I don't use this word lightly, fully addicted. I'd play for hours. I'd close my eyes and I'd see the bricks falling as I fell asleep. It was bad.
Oh, yeah.
It was very
bad.
Yeah.
No, I remember. Same thing.
No regrets. None. Maybe. So I find the topic of kind of after school activities really fascinating because it can be so informative in terms of what your kids, you know, enjoy, engage in, what you pay for one thing. I always remember seeing a tweet which was like, I will always encourage my child to follow their dreams, especially if I've paid for the term up front. It's like, you're not getting out of this. If we're paying, you're going. And we're really lucky in Dubai, really sport for choice when it comes to things to be trying and doing, from, you know, parkour to music, you know, surfing to coding. So we're going to be exploring some that you have on the app today. And let's start with after school, because now I love my kids' school, but could they keep them for a few more hours? That would be quite useful. And I think we all want
that.
Oh my goodness, it would be amazing.
Did you just say follow my dreams about your kids?
No,
I think
veg.
That's what I do as well.
Like, mummy likes swimming, so you're going to like swimming. So Woohoo in Alcoz has an after school camp. What are they doing at Woohoo, which is a great spot, by the way?
So Woohoo, I think a lot of people know it now. It opened about a year ago. They've got great activities, and they know that, exactly like you said, being able to combine all the different learning and going activities in their children's museum after school is exactly what parents need, a few extra hours. So they have a bunch of different activities that involve, interactive activities and helping the kids explore their interests and practice independence. They have several rooms and different activities that you can do in there.
They've got everything, like digging for bones. They've got like a kind of cave room. They've got climbing. They've got water room. My kids love the art space as well. So there's a couple of options in terms of timing. So 2 to 5 and then 3 till 6. Is this something you have to commit to for a whole term, or are they a bit more flexible than that?
Actually, you can either go for the day or you can buy a whole week. Obviously, buying the week is a bit cheaper. So the day is at 125 and the week is 420 for the whole week. And it goes up, it's from ages 4 to 8.
Thank you for that. Woohoo. This is all, of course, on the app. Now, we've just been talking about future skills and AI came up, coding as well. I, full disclosure, downloaded a how to code app and it was like, daily tasks. I lasted 3 days and then I was like, I am so lost. But I suspect with kids, it's probably a little bit different because, well, they're children and I'm nearly 40. It's not easy to learn when you're an adult. But coding, of course, is the future across all sorts of different industries and avenues. Where can kids learn to code here?
So we have this, we've got a partnership with Ability. The venue is called Ability, and it's about learning to code through building games, which obviously it's really fascinating. The geek inside me would have loved to do that when I was a kid. They do everything from Minecraft coding to something called Scratch, which is a more simple, fun, block-based programming language. Unity, which any gamer knows, is like a massive, massively popular tool for developing games. And then Python, which is another language, that's actually what KidZap is built in.
Oh, really? Oh, Wow. Yeah. So any future app developers can be flexing their growing muscles. Now, you are, as you say, a bit of a self-confessed geek. Does this extend to robotics? Because I understand there's some robots going on as well.
Yeah, we have a deal with Unique World Robots at the moment, and we've got 15% of their courses for 10 sessions. And again, this is another thing I would have loved to do. They have different types of courses, those that involve, for example, building minifigures with Lego and actually controlling them with various electronics. They have other courses like their Genius course, which is pure fun electronics. And they even, you know, if you sign up for the Olympiad course, after the 10 sessions, you enter a global robotics competition. This is starting from 1,000 dirhams for the 10 sessions. You can choose to do one or two a week. And it's quite a wide range of ages, from 4 to 12.
Love the sound of that. Bit of robot wars. Message here from Pat saying, my kids want to learn... My kids want to learn drums. Oh, goodness. Now, Pat... My brother started playing drums at age 10. He is, however, now a rock star, so it has paid off. But trust me. And I, again, if I hear a metronome now, it makes my shoulders raise about 3 inches. I cannot cope with the sound of a metronome. But for music lessons, can you help Pat out with some drumming? I don't know, the singing, piano, guitar. Could we be putting together a little mini band?
Yeah, so there's a company called Exclusive Music Educations, which I think is really, really good. It was started by a family of musicians, actually, and my kids learn with them, so maybe I'm a bit biased,
cool.
But they're doing piano. So these guys, they do piano, guitar, and actually general music theory at a very high level. You can do it at home or from their studio. And we've got a free trial class with them. And if you like it, you can go ahead with a small discount, 250 dirhams per lesson. I mean, it's a really great quality. My kids are enjoying it a lot.
My daughter, when I was getting her ready this morning, she was playing on her little kind of toy keyboard. And because she's got quite into singing, and she'll sing me lullabies at night, not fully relaxing, to be honest, but she's trying. And she she started playing the song this morning. I was like, oh, are you going to make up some words? She was like, no, mum, it's classical. in the way that only a five-year-old can say with absolute disdain that I didn't recognise her plinky plonky music was classical. So that is Exclusive Music. And is that at home? Do they come to your house, or is that at their...
So
studio,
it's either online or in their studio. And actually, we've done both. Sometimes we usually do most of the classes online. And then when it comes to, you know, when they're doing a kind of exhibition at the school or something, they tend to go into the studio for a few hours a day so that they can really ramp up their practice.
We've got time for one more recommendation. Could we do languages? Is there anything interesting out there in terms of, kind of flexing that?
Can I squeeze two language ones into one?
Yeah, go on. I'll let you.
So the first one, because it really is the best of the best in terms of like pure, pure French. It's only about French. It's called the Alliance Française. Mm. And that's for after-school French classes. Now, your kids don't have to love it or even like it. But if you want them to learn French for whatever reason, they're the best. They've got 1,700 AED for three sessions per week.
Ooh,
that's the starting price.
That's intense. Three a week. I mean, but that's how you learn, isn't it? It's that kind of immersive... Three per week. Okay, so that's Alliance Française.
Like I said, your kids don't have to love it.
They also do film screenings. They've got all sorts of lovely events happening there. Okay, what about... Go on. Yeah, I've got literally a minute, Kareem. What you got for me
with
the languages?
Unique Kids Language Classes at the Pomegranate Institute. I love that name. It's in Barsha. They do online, okay? And they also do in-session, private, and in-group classes, German, French, Spanish, Mandarin, Arabic, English, Turkic, Russian, or even sign languages.
Wow.
Yeah. They also have a confidence course, public speaking, communications, theater, public speaking, all in one. And what's amazing is we have 35% off at their language classes.
Thanks. That's Unique Kids. And like you guys, it's kids with a Z. Or a Z, as I would say. Thank you, Kareem, so much. We didn't get to talk about online gifted and talented sessions, Mathnasium and more, but all of this can be found on Kids App. So do head over there, expand your kids' horizons, and get them out of the house for a few more hours. Kareem, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Really do appreciate your time as ever. Take care.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We love meeting inspirational people. Sometimes it's on the phone, sometimes it's in person. And joining us live now is Bahraini businesswoman Suzy Kanu, a mother and one of the top female CEOs in the Arab world. She's also the author of Hear Us Speak, Letters from Arab Women. Suzy, thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
Well, it's wonderful to have you with us and wonderful to hear your perspective, but also that of the women that you spoke to for this book. Can you tell us a little bit about why you felt this book needed to be in the world? What inspired you to bring these people together?
Actually, I just wanted to draw awareness to different issues Arab women have. And it's not trying to solve them right now. It's just trying to draw attention to them and create awareness where everyone can probably sit around their table at home and start to talk to their direct families about them, you know, because they're like elephants in the room and no one really wants to talk about it unless a problem arises. So I wanted people to start to talk about these issues instead of saying, no, we are moving forward. Without a doubt, we're moving forward, especially in the UAE and especially in Saudi and Bahrain. We are moving forward and empowering women, but we just need to discuss these topics openly.
What are some of the topics we talk about? And I ask this with pure, you know, innocence. I think so many of us need to have our eyes opened. And I guess my concern with the book is that perhaps the people that need to read it most won't be able to pick up a copy because, you know, they might not choose to engage. It's very much a decision to tune into these conversations. So can you enlighten us about some of the topics that are highlighted by some of the people you spoke to?
Yes, you're very correct, actually. Actually, you phrased it very well. It's actually, you know, obviously I'm biased by saying that it's a beautiful book, but it's a nice, softly written book. It's interviews with all these amazing women I met around the Arab world. And I expected to meet one or two in every country, and I had more than 20 in every country. They wanted their voice to be heard. They wanted to discuss things. Now, there are no names in the book. Not every woman said, you know, please, I'd like my name in the book. And that's understandable. So I said I would put no names for anyone. So some of the topics are like the one that that I just don't understand why we still can't move forward on is citizenship. You know, we as mothers can give birth to children, obviously. We give birth to children, but we can't grant them citizenship. Citizenship only can come from the father. Mm-hmm. And that actually has happened many times. And the only continent, basically, in the world that has refused to sign this, that had apprehensions about this bill in the United Nations, the SIDAW, were the Arab world. And it's only one country, I'm not sure. I think most of the Arab world haven't agreed to allow mothers to give citizenship to their children. Now, that is a very sore subject, you know, to many women who've gone through this. And the other topics are basically like what happens all around the world, whether it's physical abuse, it happens all around the world. It's not just in the Arab world. Actually, I think we have it less than other parts of the world. But our law system isn't strong enough. Mm. Our law system, the judicial system, doesn't come through well enough. And other topics such as, you know, empowering women. Why shouldn't we have more women on public boards or private boards? We don't. You know, sometimes if we have one, we advertise that so much that, you know, it's an embarrassment, you know, right?
It kind of muddies the waters
of it.
And I find it so interesting that the people that you chose to speak to, because as you say, you were spoilt for choice when it came to hearing the stories. And some of them are incredibly personal tales. Some of them, as you're referring to there, you know, real universal issues of womanhood, but also humanity. You spoke to, well, you know, people in media, you spoke to, you know, refugee, and it was wives and daughters, mothers and sisters. And what were some of your big surprises upon interviewing and speaking to these women? Were there anything that you came away and thought, you've made me think about that in a completely different way?
I just, you know, I always knew we were strong as women, but I just didn't understand how strong we really were. You know, we really are. You know, we're very resilient. We're very strong. Mm-hmm. And we're much more determined than we think we are. You know, the women who have gone through so much hardships are very, were beautiful. They came, well, not all women, obviously, some women just give up. But they were, the ones that impressed me the most were the ones that have gone through so much hardship, and yet they come out and they decided to forgive. They decided to forgive and move forward into another life. You know, one of the journalists that actually spoke to me is the Bahraini journalist, that's her chapter. She said something that I can still not forget. She said that God gives you many keys. It's up to you to decide which doors to open. Mm. And she was so positive. And she said, look at me now. You know, I was tearing while I was writing her story. She said, why are you crying, Susie? I'm happy. Look at me now. God's given me so much. I'm blessed. And I've chosen to forgive and move forward. And that gave me an aha moment. I think in all our lives, we sometimes, you know, we tend to put a lot of emphasis on the negativity in our lives, right? And this woman who's gone through so much hardship has decided to forgive and move forward. A beautiful story. All of them were just beautiful women, to be frank. Every single woman I met.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Joining us live on the line is Susie Kanu. She is a Bahraini businesswoman, one of the top female CEOs in the Arab world, a mother as well, and the author of a book called Hear Us Speak, Letters from Arab Women. Susie, I wanted to ask you, and you refer in the book to, you know, just how much things have changed, you know, how much we've seen amazing role models in women. We have seen legislation change and really just how much women have fought around the globe to be heard. And I think this book is a really amazing example of that. And they are anonymous, which I think allows a really interesting platform to have that freedom of expression. But what myths or indeed misconceptions do you feel are still perpetuated globally around women?
Well, I think globally, yes, there are misconceptions. You know, we can't pretend there aren't. They do think we're a bit submissive and, you know, we just basically move backwards towards to the man. And that's definitely a misconception. I had an interview with in the States, and they asked me about hijab and why is it forced upon us? And I said, it's not forced upon us. It's a choice, you know. So that misconception's still there. But people, I think, who are curious, who actually want to read about our countries and societies, understand it much more. And the world is much more global and international right now, you know. You've got everything on your phone, you know. You can find out any question immediately. Mm-hmm. But yes, they think we are forced to dress the way we are. They do think we're forced to wear a hijab. Or I had a question asking me, why are we wearing niqab? And I said, that's not true at all, you know. It is a choice. We have a choice. And we live in a very tolerant society. And it's a choice we make. Of course, there is a cultural issue to it also, but it is a choice. So that's a misconception as well. And I had once, I had an interview with a lady, and I had someone from the Western world was sitting next to me. And one of the ladies coming in was very conservatively dressed for an interview. And she actually remarked and said, I don't think we're going to get anything out of her. You know, it looks like it's going to be a boring interview. And I just looked at her and I was shocked, you know, and I was shocked. So the lady came and her story was just remarkable. It was very flamboyant, you know. So at the end, I turned and I looked at her and I said, I can't believe you actually have that misconception. Mm-hmm. And she actually apologized. She said, my apologies. I really didn't think I was like that. My apologies. So sometimes, you know, people, maybe they have it in them, but I think if they're curious enough to actually educate themselves and read and see, they won't have it. But in general, we've really moved forward. I can't say that we really haven't and we're not. We've really moved forward, but we're not there yet. That's what I keep saying in the book. We're not there yet, you know. I would love it if women, you know, just realize how wonderful and beautiful they are and how much power they have, and to just believe in themselves, you know. Once they start to believe in themselves, things change.
And I think
things actually change.
And a big part of it is role models. I'm a firm believer that, you know, you can't be it unless you see it. And I think you're an amazing example of that as a business person in this part of the world. Have you ever been underestimated over the years, Susie? Has anyone kind of got your number?
All the time. I wish, you know, when I started, you know, I had to be very politically correct and very quiet, you know, at the right time. And then, you know, and then you just, you know, you sort of, you know, you choose which battles you want to fight. And then bit by bit, you prove yourself. And it's just because I had passion for it. I was consistent. I didn't give up, you know. And I had to make it. I wasn't given this position at all. I had to actually work for it. And I think that makes me feel even more satisfied that I actually had to work for it. Mm-hmm. And I actually proved it with numbers at the end of the day. You know, the balance sheets proves it. But the opportunities are there. And what shocked me the most was Generation Z. My daughter actually made a comment to me, which made me think and say, oh my God, I have to go back and interview Generation Z around the Arab world, or Z, as I say. And I was pleasantly surprised, you know. We don't have to give them any more empowerment. They're there.
Good. That's what I want to hear. I've just been doing some training to be a mentor, a big sister, they're calling it, in a scheme, working with 11, 12, 13-year-olds. And it's all about, you know, not fixing these girls, but empowering them, you know, giving confidence for them to find their own career paths. And I feel hugely honoured and a huge amount of responsibility in this role. And this is something you're obviously passionate about yourself, both as a businesswoman and as a mother. What changes would you like to see, or are you seeing around the corner when it comes to women in the Arab world?
Well, you know what it is? It is what I think we've done for our children is something we didn't realize we actually did, is we've actually empowered them by allowing them to have choices. You see, I think there are three reasons basically why the Generation Z is very empowered and very strong and independent. It's number one is obviously the household. You know, the parents have basically told them, be what you want to be. In most cases, not in every case, you know. But they've allowed them to have their independent thoughts, you know, and to be what they want to be. And, of course, the other very, very pivotal point is the social media. Social media has turned everything around, you know, whether you like it or not. It's actually empowered them a lot, and it's actually drawn their attention to a lot of things, and they won't lie low. Mm-hmm. They want to keep believing in themselves, and they will stand up. You know, when I interviewed them, they were very, and this is all around the Arab world, they're very strong, whatever beliefs they had, but they believed that they should have their own choices. And this is what they want to do, and nothing should hold them back anymore. And that's what was fantastic. Nothing they said would hold us back. Whichever path they choose, just nothing was going to hold them back. And I was very much impressed with that, you know. And the third, obviously, element is governments have actually opened the doors more for women than they ever did way before, right? Mm-hmm. It's a household. It's a bit of affirmative action. I think we need much more. I think we need more affirmative actions to put women on boards. By merit, obviously, but we do need to force to have more than just one woman on a public or even a private board. We need to have more judges. We have less than 10% of judges are women in the judicial system. This is just not good. It's really not good enough.
So, Susie, not only are you sharing the stories of these women through the book, but you are passionate about entrepreneurship, understandably, and you've got a masterclass to encourage and educate women about joining the family business. And you yourself joined the family business in the automobile industry with your father's blessing and, as you say, on your own merit. Can you explain a little bit about what women could learn through you, from you? Because unfortunately, some women are perhaps encouraged or not even allowed to work after they become mothers. So can you speak to us about, I guess, where the opportunities lie?
I think right now there are many more opportunities than there were before, even when I started 20 years ago. You know, now there's so many things you can actually do at home. I think it's what the Japanese call ikigai, you know, finding a purpose in life. You've got to find it and find that passion and make sure it's good for the society, you know? So find that purpose, whatever it is, if it's drawing paintings, if it's basket weaving, whatever it is, you know, if it's reading, if it's just make sure it's good for the community and find that passion. And you can find it. You don't have to all sit behind a desk and work, you know? That doesn't work for everyone, you know? Not everyone enjoys it. And the working environment now is changing. So I'd encourage someone to really find a passion, whatever it is, to be frank. And only through that will you feel like you're growing. Without it, I think it's a bit more difficult.
Susie, lastly, I'm keen to ask you, and based on, I mean, my goodness, your resume is amazing. When we think about, you know, leadership and business, but what does success look like to you as a modern woman in the Arab world?
You know, to be honest, for me, actually, that's a good question. I think success to me is making a difference, creating a legacy and making a difference for others, whether it's women, whether it's men, it's just trying to make a difference. And I know I've been successful financially and I'm blessed for that. But I honestly think making the difference that I'm trying to make right now is giving me so much more purpose in life, actually. And I think if we can all try to make a difference in anyone's lives and, I don't know, do some good, do something with impact. I invest through impact investments, you know, try to do that. And it does come.
leave the world better than how we found it. Susie, thank you so, so much. Susie speaking to us, as I said, from Bahrain. Susie, can you really appreciate your time and a number of messages going, book sounds amazing. If you want details of the book. Susie, thank you. All the very best to you and yours.
Speak soon. Take care. Thank you very much.
The book is called Hear Us Speak, Letters from Arab Women.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We've had some amazing authors on the show today. So fantastic to be joined now by someone who's putting together some of these books for good cause as well. Agnes in the studio, founder of a new children's book subscription service. Can you tell us all about it? What's it called and what's it all about?
Of course. Thank you for having me, Helen. So Academy is a unique book subscription service for families to help parents introduce their little children to important environmental and societal issues, but very much in a child-friendly, age-appropriate and fun way. And unlike any other usual subscription service that you would probably find anywhere out there, we actually allow complete freedom for parents to customize their boxes before they receive them on a monthly basis.
So I think for many parents, the frustration is the kids don't like to read. Unfortunately, we've got this big pull of the small screens and the big screens. And books, as we know, are, for me, I mean, I had my kids last night being like, Mummy, can we have just one more book? Because I realised I hadn't read them at all this week, which is normally our kind of our little kind of bedtime ritual. But sometimes the enthusiasm has to come from the parent.
Absolutely.
You know, they're kind of modelling that behaviour. And I'm very conscious that I read a lot of my books on Kindle, which perhaps doesn't quite make that kind of connect the dot with my kids, that I'm actually reading a book, not just holding another device. With books, though, it's not just about that time together. It is that kind of shared experience. It's the holding of the book. It's the illustrations. But what you're really tackling here is about the message as well. What are some of the issues that you are looking to address?
So we're looking into a number of issues to highlight. We've only launched 11 weeks ago, and actually the very first box. Thank you. The very, very first box focused on gender equality. And, you know, you'll find characters that in our children's books that are mainly male, and they're taking main character roles. And I think there's a massive gap in that. So we've selected a number of books to highlight that, you know, girls can be pirates and all the monsters can be female as well. It doesn't have to be all male. And I think it's a very important message, and it's very suitable to a young audience. So we have to start there. We also covered gratitude, which was for the month of Ramadan. We celebrated Mother Nature as well to appreciate the beauty of our nature and the planet. And the last month, which is now for May, we actually covered racism and colorism, just to introduce the topic for children to understand that there are inequalities in the society and help them prepare for the future.
I find this really interesting because I went into a bookshop recently and there was a very clear label on the shelf which said girls' books. And I was like, sorry, what is this? But I understand why it's the easiest option, isn't it? You know, you're buying a present for a little boy, so you buy a book with a male character, some kind of typically kind of masculine traits of, you know, pirates and dinosaurs and all that kind of stuff. And it does take it's a very conscious decision as a parent to try and flip that. But the books have to be there to support that as well. How old are your kids and have they kind of inspired a bit of this journey?
So I have two girls. Luna is 5.5 and Mona is 2.5. And yes, they have been the complete muses for the project. I actually don't have any memories of reading with my own parents. I don't have those childhood memories. So as soon as Luna was born, I wanted to change that. I wanted to make sure that when she grows up, she remembers the beautiful times that we've shared together and the beautiful stories that we read together. But just to touch on your trip to the bookstore, I think toy stores have that as well. And you have the pink aisle for the girls and you have the blue aisle for the boys. And that just sends a really wrong message. And I think the issue really lies in the society. And some parents might argue, why should I talk about gender equality? Why should I talk to my child about racism? They are small. They see no differences. They see no colors. They don't see the injustices in the world. But I always say that actually society has that huge power to impact them and create certain biases. So we are in the role model positions to change that and instill the values and instill the interest and you know, to raise kind of future citizens of the world. We have that power.
And it doesn't have to be one of those conversations of, you know, racism is wrong and this is why. Sometimes it's literally as easy as putting a book into a child's hand that, you know, is the characters are representing all different backgrounds and cultures, or one that perhaps isn't yours, and it just becomes the norm. But as I said, it's such a conscious decision, and I think this is why this is really useful, because you're effectively curating what's out there. But how do you begin to choose? Because there are lots and lots of books out there. Agnes, how do you bring these books together?
So we actually work with international publishers directly, and we import the books here. The selection process is quite lengthy, and we rely on lots of school librarians, also online resources, to make sure that our books feature diverse characters. They touch on the specific themes and topics, and they are definitely age appropriate. Mm-hmm. But just to probably go back to your topic, you know, because we are handling difficult conversations, and let's say racism, you know, it doesn't have to be like, you know, white supremacy and all of that stuff, but simply equipping probably parents to give child-friendly examples, like going in the park and acknowledging the beauty of our nature and saying, look, flowers come in yellow, pink and green and orange colors, just like people. And, you know, we are all different. It's not a big deal. It's not always about creating an issue about that. And I've seen experiences and examples in real life where, you know, in a shopping aisle somewhere and in the park, a girl will point to another child saying, oh, mommy, why is that girl's skin so dark? And parents, while they might be all for diversity and inclusion, just go through that panic-inducing and knee-buckling experience, not knowing how to answer those questions. And that in turn creates bias. So I think if parents have the right tools and just these simple child-friendly examples, and books can help them find those real examples, we avoid future misunderstandings and we sort of resolve potential issues before they arise.
Question from Elisa saying, what other topics would you like to explore?
So really close topics to my heart are body positivity, consent, body boundaries, safety. And if you think we live in such a privileged and such a safe environment, what happens if our daughters or boys go study abroad, you know, boarding schools, think international, and they have no education and we haven't prepped them for those important conversations? So I think these are crucial ones. But we want to strike the right balance between really serious topics and something that's a little bit more fun. So June's theme, and we've just announced it today, it's all about water, seas and oceans. And that's an invitation to celebrate the oceans and the beauty and look at the beaches we enjoy here on a daily basis in the UAE, but also talk about plastic pollution. Again, in a child-friendly way, and maybe encourage families to do small steps, such as switch from plastic toothbrushes to biodegradable toothbrushes, because we are all accountable. So just striking a balance between really serious and fun themes is the way forward.
Okay, thank you so much for coming in. I think it's definitely kind of got me thinking about what's on our bookshelf and what perhaps might be missing. So thank you. We've had a number of messages going, how do you spell it? Where can we find you? I'll hand over to you. How can people track down?
So it's Akindemy, short for Kind Academy, and we spell it AKINDEMY. The website is .com. You can send us a message on Instagram, which is also Akindemy. You can get in touch with me directly, which is welcome@akindemy.com.
If you want those details, do feel free to drop me a message on 4001. I'll be very happy to connect you with Agne and the team there. Huge congratulations on the launch, on your third baby, and really excited to see what comes up in the future. If there's any businesses that you think deserve a shout out, a spotlight, we'd love to hear from you on the show. And equally, any topics when it comes to parenting, children's health, or indeed education, we'd love to get your take on what people are talking about. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.